Your heart palpitations are a real thing, and you can hear those on the microphone.
I set my grill on fire.
Cardboard support group that can help you, because you're going to need it.
I've been a little devoid of exciting lands for a while.
Uninspired would be the best one.
And so I started with envy and jealousy.
I think at 300, I'd probably still be excited.
Super ultra mega ultra box.
Rotation can't come soon enough.
Oh, you brave soul. Welcome to this week's episode of Tryhards. This voyage is about to set sail, ready or not. We'll palooza our way through the most recent GP, its legacy, for double your fun. Strap in. Should be a weird and wild episode of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrease, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. Matt, you were going at it hard this weekend, Labor Day weekend in the States. What are you drinking tonight on your recovery?
Water, because we had a little get together yesterday, and it's my birthday this week, so we celebrated my birthday early. People were over for like 14 hours. Didn't get as much done work wise as I wanted to, so it's going to be water tonight.
Well, it's just another week. Matt's got water in the glass. Sierra Nevada's Torpedo Extra IPA for myself here this evening as we get this going. It got hot again, but I wanted something with a little bit more of a bite to it this time around. So the Torpedo has been good to me so far. Brian, what do you got tonight?
I am working my way through the copious amount of New Glarus Spotted Cow that is still in the fridge. Actually gave a six-pack to one of our good friends, Kate, for her birthday today. Kind of a Labor Day birthday celebration. So the stock was lower than I thought it was going to be, but still plenty enough to keep my palate all tasty probably through the end of the month.
We hope you've got something delicious as you enjoy this episode of Tryhards. Guys, what magic did you get to play this week? Matt, I know you were busy, a lot of work, but did you get to play any cards?
I got to do a league online. I'm still trying to find that modern deck. Not having much luck in finding one, so if you guys know of one that's fun and unique, shoot it over to me. Today I was watching one with a Reality Acid in it, so maybe that's something. Probably not.
Well, we're going to be brewing, Matt, something for modern next week as part of Tryhards. This week, all I got to do with football season starting was relax and play a little bit casually online on Arena. Just to annoy some people, I put together a blue-white Pillow Fort Mill deck, and I've had a ton of fun with it. I sent the list over to Brian, and he actually used it as bait to entice a newcomer into Magic. Brian, your week this week, you got asked to be someone's guru. Now, do you still get the lands, or is that promotion long gone?
Boy, if I get the lands after a good friend of mine just said, hey, you want to teach me that game that you love? That would be like double win for me. So no, I do not expect guru lands coming in the mail. My friend Matt, who is one of those guys who is super smart, and every time we get together to play cards, whether it's hearts or spades or whether we're playing, you know, hand and foot, euchre, whatever it is, he's always the guy who's going to win or you want on your team. Same goes with board games. We play Settlers, we play Axis and Allies, we play Ticket to Ride, whatever. He's the guy who's always going to win those games, it seems like. So I was surprised that he'd never actually played Magic. I thought he was maybe the guy who's like, yeah, I played it a long time ago, never got into it. But he was so jonesed to actually sit down with cards. So I happen to have a couple of starter decks, the 30-card pre-constructed ones. He opted for the white, and I sat down with Green, and we just kind of went to town. I kind of explained the whole concept of it and went through, you know, untap, upkeep, draw, you know, when you can play, when you can't play things. He didn't make very many mistakes. The biggest thing was he kept calling lands territories, which I thought was quite cute, you know, and that's just from board game days and things. But he picked up on it really, really well, and I got to see him again today, and I was like, so did you get some Magic in today? And he's like, no, but I'm going to play after I get home tonight. And I'm like, yep, keep practicing and stuff. He was asking me all kinds of questions, so I could tell that he had been thinking about it. Yeah, so I'm super stoked that he is now, I can count him among the people who I've maybe, quote unquote, introduced to the game, and hopefully we'll get a lot of games in.
Matt, welcome to the fold. Your life will never be the same after this. There's actually a cardboard support group that can help you, because you're going to need it going forward. Speaking of someone who needs help, Bert Wilson. Bert, we would normally set off the rap air horn for you, but ours is broken, unfortunately. We haven't used any sweet Patreon funds to get it fixed. Bert is brand new to the Tryhards Patreon. Bert, thank you so much for jumping in and choosing to support this cast with your hard-earned money. Bert Wilson, our brand new Tryhards Patreon. This week was a really cool week in tournament magic. Double GPs are always very interesting. You get to see the logistics. You get an extra day of magic coverage. There's something about it. It always happens with the Pro Tour, and you have these double GPs or occasionally a Vegas triple GP, and you get coverage that starts on Friday. It always feels like a three-day weekend to me. Couple that with the fact it was Labor Day weekend in the States this weekend, and man, what a Magicapalooza this weekend. GP Richmond, Legacy got it started, and this was the Reed Duke experiment. If you missed last week's episode, we all shared our hopes and our fears for how the actual experiment that Channel Fireball Productions was doing with commentator slash potential player of the year Reed Duke was going to go this weekend, and we'll get to that in just a moment. 843 players registered for Legacy. Andrew Cuneo ended up taking it down over Lucien Longlace. Cuneo was on Blue White Miracles with, in my mind, a card we're going to cycle back to basics in the main deck. Longlace was on lands. The rest of the top eight, Miracles, Rug Delver, Blue-Black Delver Shadow, Blue-White Stoneblade in the hands of a man who's made his name doing Miracle Tech, Eldrazi Stompy, and Grixis Control. Joe Lawsett's loss aside, this was actually kind of a throwback, Brian, with the exception of Blue-Black Delver, to some of the strategies and archetypes that we saw 5-6 years ago in Legacy. It looks like Deathrite Shaman's banning, along with Gitaxian Probe, has put us back into a spot in Legacy where you can have cards in your deck with converted mana cost higher than 2, and you could expect to get to them regularly. It seems that was the refrain we saw over this weekend.
That was exactly the refrain. I love the fact that the three of us who were kind of texting each other about, you know, the various things over the weekend, and that was one of the things that we were talking about, and just to have you two confirm that, I think, because when you're watching it, you're like, is it me, or does it seem like Legacy has gotten, quote-unquote, slower? That's actually a really, really good thing, I think, for the format. But to see the Grixis Controls-type strategies there, the Stoneblade-type strategies. I mean, when Joe Lissette is able to run Nahiri Lithomancer in his sideboard, that's got to make everybody happy. That card is just so fun. And a Deathrite Shaman world, that card can't exist. I was really happy with Top 8, first of all. I thought it was a little Miracles-heavy, but, you know, hey, still one of the top decks in the format, and people are going to have to figure out how to beat it.
Yeah, Brian, that spread of converted mana costs allowed a couple of other decks to bubble up inside the top 16. You had two more Grixis Control decks, a Blue-White Blade deck, Grixis Delver times 2, Eldrazi Stompy, Rug Delver, and Blue-Black Death Shadow. Matt, it looks more and more like modern staples are leaking into Legacy. Culligan's Command in the Grixis Control decks. Of course, we have Street Wraith, Death Shadow, and even Watery Grave. Is the fact that Legacy is slowing down going to give rise to some of the powerful grindy cards that we see more often in Modern?
I think it's going to. I think this GP was great. Really shows how slow it is. Brian, you hit the nail on the head as far as Miracles goes. Miracles didn't change a ton, but basically the rest of the format changed. So I think that the decks are just going to have to learn how to beat Miracles again. I mean, it was a skill at one time. Everything looks really cool. We're going to see a lot more 3-drops, I think. The return of kind of True Name Nemesis is a go-to, I think, is going to work. Mm-hmm. Lots of Jaces. That was kind of a big one, like lots and lots of Jaces. You know, it may be time for cards such as like Ashiok to pop back up. Baby Jace, like the, when I say Baby Jace, I mean the Flip Jace. Things like that. And I am really excited to see where this is going to go. It's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. The Jace Wars seem to be back upon us. And Brian, one of the cards that you've championed for quite some time in Legacy was, in my mind, the card of the tournament. Andrew Cuneo had 2 copies in his main deck, and we saw blue-white control decks going to it all weekend long. Back to basics. The price tag on this is already sailed, so don't expect it in the elevator with Matt coming up anytime soon.
I think it's up to, what, $80 now?
Yeah, it was $60, I think, going into the weekend. But, Brian, you've been championing this card for a while. It seems like the metagame may have passed it by with the Deathrite decks gone and everybody trying to be greedy with 4 colors. But now that Deathrite doesn't give you a way to fix your mana, even playing 3 colors could be a problem if back to basics becomes a staple.
Back to Basics just does what Blood Moon decks used to want to do. It just does it so much more efficiently because you can still play through Blood Moon on a certain level. Back to Basics, with just the prevalence of the dual lands in Legacy, it's nuts. The Grixis Control deck just cannot deal with this deck. Eldrazi, it just kind of shuts it down. Obviously, if there's a board presence, you're going to have to deal with that Reality Smasher or Endless One, whatever's on the board, obviously. But Back to Basics, if you can get it out ahead of your opponent, it can really put a kink in the plans. And so I think this is definitely a go-to card for a lot of blue decks going forward, whether or not they would maybe not think of running it because they're not a quote-unquote control deck. But Back to Basics can do so many things and allow your proactive Jace game plan, you know, slam a Back to Basics, plus two Fate Sealing with Jace, your heart palpitations are a real thing, and you can hear those on the microphone.
Well, if you can't afford a Legacy mana base, just give those people who can the finger and spend 20% of it and get Back to Basics and just win that
right
way.
Up.
That is, in my mind, the card of the tournament this weekend. Back to Basics. Well, the weekend wouldn't have had the same cachet without the aforementioned experiment run by Channel Fireball to feature Reed Duke as not only part of the coverage team, but to give us a look inside what it's like to be a pro playing their rounds. He was mic'd up and in the feature match area for every round, either the feature or the time walk match. This experiment had us on both sides of the fence in last week's episode. Your thoughts on how it turned out? Would you suggest any improvements? How often do you want to see something like this? Are there other players that you would like to see get this treatment? For me, I felt more invested in this tournament than I have in a tournament in a long time. And that's because this coverage and this angle made it feel personal to me. And I think maybe Wizards should take a cue from Channel Fireball and start using some of their beloved pros to help market this game, because there are so many people who were involved because it was Reed Duke. And then the people who watched the coverage got personally engaged. I thought this was a home run. Matt, you had a few reservations last week. What is your feeling on how this experiment turned out?
I think it was a freaking home run. Just to be the negative Nancy, there was a couple things for improvement. One was, I don't know why he wasn't wearing a wireless mic. There was a lot of background noise there, so sometimes it was kind of hard to hear what exactly was going on. The other one would be, this is a reservation I had last week. It did not happen, but I was very concerned about it, was that what if he, you know, essentially O2 dropped? I understand he's going to go into the booth for coverage, but if he O2 dropped, that would make the coverage that much worse because this was such a key part of the weekend. We were discussing this actually yesterday. It was Magic Players over, and I think we came to the agreement that what they need to do is add a personal mic onto it. The pre-recorded sideboard guides were fantastic, like just amazing. Then the other one is, have two pro players you're following around in your coverage area. If one happens to scrub out, then you just go for you go to the other one. Then if you have coverage, or if you essentially have a recorded video that you can use later, just use that for YouTube upload or Twitch upload, whatever, however they want to go to market essentially with some of their additional content. I loved it. I love seeing him walk through the deck. I actually also love that he was playing Grixis Control, so that he could actually play some games. If he was playing a deck like Reanimator or something along those lines, I don't think it would have been nearly as exciting, because it would have been a lot of games where you just win the game type of thing.
As much as I loved this, I don't know that I want it to become the default way that we cover tournaments. Brian, would you suggest any improvements? How often do you want to see this angle of coverage taken? And are there any other players that come to mind that you would like to follow this closely for an entire weekend?
That second question is really, really great. Now, to get back to your main point, though, I do want to say something, Sean. I think the personal invested quality, I think, that you had, there was a word I wrote down for the cast this weekend as I was watching coverage, and that was intimate. I felt like when you were in the games listening to both players, you could hear, you know, all the interactions. And just the way people passed the turn, just the way they said it resolves, or sure, or you got it, or play one Nimbly Boy, the Rug Delver, the opponent that Reed Duke was playing. Even the one time when Duke had to say to Saito, like, hey, you're playing too slow. just hearing all of that banter, I just felt like it was such an intimate experience, and you don't get to, you know, see that a whole lot. So I thought that was great. To get to the point about, do I want to see this a lot? No, I don't. I feel like it would take some of the allure out of it. I, for one, am happy they did it with Legacy because there's so much interaction. I think Modern would be something you could try as well. Standard, I don't know if I would be wanting to see Standard in this format. It just doesn't seem like it would go over that well. If there was another player that we could get mic'd up in this same format, I think I would want somebody with maybe a little bit, how do I say this nicely, a chip on their shoulder, that sometimes they play a little less mean than Reed does. You know, Reed is obviously just an exceptional player, but is also known to be the gentleman of the game. And I would love to see somebody like a Joe Lissette, somebody who...
Joe Lissette would be perfect for that role.
You know what I mean? He would be the guy who would kind of call people on little plays and be like, wait a minute, the timing wasn't exactly right there. Not everybody would like that, but I think it would bring another level of flavor to the game. And so that is something I would like to see if they did this in kind of a rotation. You know, Modern this week featuring Matt Nass. Sure. He's been, you know, killing it with KCI and other decks.
You can't play KCI, though, to do that. You can't do that.
No, it's true. And so I think you have to look at what the player is playing and obviously make it a worthwhile visual experience. So, no, I overall thought this was a slam dunk for Wizards. I didn't really appreciate how much they were kind of pulling Reed this way and that way. I felt like the poor guy had to kind of like play a match of Magic, come to the booth, throw on headphones, justify his match of Magic. Maybe they let him go pee and then get back to playing a match of Magic, you know, where he's mic'd up, he's under the lights and everything, and then they brought him back to the booth again. It just seemed like it was a little overwhelming, maybe. I mean, he played great. It didn't look like it bothered him, but I was kind of feeling bad for him. Like, man, you know, that's just got to be a mental grind. And at some point they were joking and saying something along the lines of, hey, by the way, we're going to be following you to whatever restaurant you go to. And we're going to find out exactly, you know, what you order. And it was kind of funny. But at the same time, I was like, yeah, that kind of seems like what we're doing here. You know, you're just kind of, it's the Reed Duke all the time, kind of like, you know, the TED TV kind of thing. So other than that, I'm all in favor of them doing this again, but I hope they pick their spots.
Yeah, I think that there will be some technical improvements along the way, and those will only help it. The pro that kept coming to my mind that I'd like to see, Paolo Vitor Dama de Rosa, would be great in that role.
Oh, that'd be a good one, yeah.
I mean, I think he'd be somebody that I would enjoy following throughout the day. Congratulations to Reed Duke. He did an amazing job not only playing but commentating and taking this all on his shoulders, just handling it with aplomb. He is the gentleman of Magic. Congratulations, Reed. In Standard this weekend, 765 players for Part 2 of GP Richmond. Alex Hahn got a 2-0 win on Red-Black Aggro over Mike Segrist on Blue-Black Midrange. The rest of the top eight, Blue-White Control, Red-Black Midrange, Red-Black Aggro, Esper Control, and another Blue-Black Midrange. Matt, it seems to me that the format is still Chain Whirler versus Scarab God versus Teferi, and Chain Whirler is so good, occasionally Scarab God and Teferi have to team up in order to get wins over it. The one thing that stood out to me is there was a deck that was MIA at the top end. Where was God Pharaoh's Gift in whatever color combination you want to play it? That, to me, was like, huh?
Standard's not that diverse. It's not about having different decks, but it's the same cycle of cards, and that's a side effect of having such a large standard. Rotation can't come soon enough, to put it lightly. Yeah, I agree. I didn't see God Pharaoh's Gifts. I didn't see nearly as much Storm as I thought I would be seeing. I still feel like that's one of the better decks in the formats, but with the attendance where it was, I think a lot of people kind of felt the same way as me, where they said, well, you know what, I'll go out and do what I need to do, but I'm not going to innovate because everything's going to change in a month. I can't wait for that change to happen, mainly because I also need to find a standard deck, and I hope there's some sweet, sweet standard decks with Guilds of Ravnica being released.
That was the only GP this weekend. This coming weekend, GP Detroit. Brian is hard at work on our Team Unified Modern decks as we speak, even though we're not going. Brian, I know you're working on those. So
I'll
be excited to see what I get to play. That's the tournament news from this weekend. That brings us up to this week's news around the world of Magic. The news and the tournament news kind of crossed over for a bit this weekend on the Player of the Year race. Brian, you mentioned Intimate with Reed Duke this weekend, and I think people are getting catapulted into a very tight and compelling Player of the Year race. Sometimes this feels remote, but because Duke is one of the major trio that has a chance to take this down in his role this weekend. Everybody seems to be talking about it now. Coming into the tournament, Seth Manfield, Luis Salvato, and Reed Duke all looking to take down Player of the Year. Things didn't go very well in Legacy for Manfield or Salvato. They ended up dropping from that tournament and jumping into Standard. At the end of the weekend, the way it shook out, Seth Manfield ended up in the top eight of the Standard GP. Salvato didn't do as well. And so how we actually have it standing right now, 81 points for Seth Manfield, 3 points ahead of Reed Duke and Luis Salvato, only 2 GPs left this season. So this is coming down tight to the wire, that taking on an additional level of charisma and interest because of the way GP Richmond played out. While the Player of the Year race was heating up in Richmond, speculation was heating up about the return to Ravnica at PAX. Guys, Wizards always makes a point out of revealing something about the fall set at PAX each year. And the first thing on everybody's mind when we're going back to Ravnica is, will Shocklands be included in the set? Matt, there was a lot of wild speculation, but we now know from over the weekend, Shocklands are back. We're going to talk about the mechanics and some other things in an upcoming show. Just your reaction to knowing that Shocklands are back in Standard.
Look, I know Wizards hates shuffling in Standard, but why they didn't put Fetchlands here instead of Shocklands, this means we're not going to have Fetchlands in Standard at least for 2 years, 2.5 years probably. I know it's kind of the expectation, but I think it was just uninspired would be the best one. Don't know what the full story is on Guilds of Ravnica. I watched the trailer, which was kind of, is really cool, actually. But it seems like Nicol Bolas is kind of bringing war to Ravnica. I think it would have been really cool to do like a Shockland variant of some type, something that he changed or something along those lines. Financially, that's fine. They were not starting to creep back up. And I think they're going to be down that $5 range now, which is fine for that mana base within Modern. But at the same time, you know, Shocklands are Shocklands. You know, they're a slam dunk, but I feel like they're just uninspired, if that makes sense.
Brian, are the Shocklands now the actual signature of Ravnica? They're the only thing that's been repeated every time we go back. Are they just such an iconic staple along with the guilds that you have to include them? And Rosewater has even hinted that the guilds are going to be shuffled, destroyed. Something is going to happen in the plot line with this return to Ravnica. So, are you excited for another round of Shocklands?
Semi-excited for the round, another round of Shocklands, I guess. I like that they did new artwork on it. I thought that would have been really, really lazy. Again, it's kind of like, hey, Ravnica's out. Oh my god, Shocklands, that's awesome. Then round two of Return to Ravnica, oh, Shocklands, awesome. And now it's kind of like, you know, we're equating that with this cycle of lands. And is that, you know, when we go back there 3, 4, 5, 6 times, it's always going to be Shocklands? I don't know. There's a little bit of staleness to that that doesn't excite me all that much. Hurley, I get your point about no fetches in Standard, but at the same time, I feel like we've been a little devoid of exciting lands for a while. I would have loved to have seen some main lands come back, honestly.
Or main lands would have been really cool. I just feel like stale is the correct, what you're talking about. I think that's the correct way to look at it.
Not really excited, John. I'm not like, yay, you know, from a financial standpoint, anything. Most of the people like us who have been playing for a long time, we have our sets from either Ravnica or Return to Ravnica. Yeah, picking up some more, that it's trade bait, it's whatever. It's not the most like jump up and down. I'm more excited to see what the direction they take the guilds. And like you're saying, Rosewater blowing up the guilds, or you know, they're going to be destroyed in some way, shape, or form. That's the storyline I'm looking for.
Are you more excited for the other announcement at PAX, the super ultra mega ultra box that Wizards released? WotC's latest, I guess, premium offering is the way to put it, a $250 box in which you will be getting packs of Guilds of Ravnica, but you're also guaranteed to get alternate art, borderless full art, Planeswalkers, Liliana Last Hope, Nicol Bolas, Planeswalker, the OG Bolas, Duretti, Ingenious Iconoclast, Elspeth, Knight Errant, Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas, Matt's pick for best Planeswalker of all time, the new Raul Zarek, is it Viceroy, which looks pretty cool, and one as yet unrevealed Planeswalker from the upcoming set. Does it excite you at $250?
It excites me, absolutely. 250 is steep, but I think you're going to be happy once you open that box and you see just the phenomenal artwork there. Plus, you get to open packs, which is everybody's favorite pastime of all, wherever, whenever. Always cracking packs is fun. So, yeah, at 250, I'm excited. I think at 300, I'd probably still be excited. I think this is a slam dunk deal for WotC.
Okay, I thought maybe Brian would choose one third of an underground sea rather than this box, but he's still excited, which is worthwhile. Matt, I did a little bit of putting pen to scratch paper here. So if we're looking at the various value of the new Guilds of Ravnica cards, we don't really know what that's going to be, so I just included their pack price. With that being said, you've still got $202 to make up. Liliana Last Hope is around $40 on your retail sites. OG Bolas is $8. Doretti, $12. Original Elspeth, $16-ish. Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, between $45 and $50. Tezzeret, about $20. And there's no pricing really uniformly yet for the two new Planeswalkers. Now, those are the non-foil first edition printings. If we look at the foil numbers, well, we're looking at about $430 worth just for those six Planeswalkers I mentioned. Where do you think these are going to fall? Should we be looking at them as non-foil, basically basic copies? Or should we be judging these as a foil premium copy because the value really swings depending on how you look at it? One way, it's not worth it. On the other side of the coin, it's severely underpriced at $250.
I'm not sure where to put that. I just don't know exactly how that sits there. I think they said premium foiling, so I really, really hope it's not stupid from the vault foiling. They don't look foiling in that picture, but I guess we'll find out later this month, actually, is probably when we'll have it. All these Planeswalkers are played, except for we don't know about the new one yet. The original Nicol Bolas is played heavily in EDH. Elspeth pops up now and then in Legacy and Modern. The rest of them are played, I would say, relatively heavily. Agent of Bolas is actually probably one of the least played ones, only because Modern's so quick lately. I don't know where they're going to sit. I do think like the Liliana, the Last Hope one, is probably going to be about $100. You kind of adjust from there. But I do think it's a slam dunk. I have two complaints about this. One is that why are they only doing this online at their store? It's not going to LGSs.
Well, that's where I was going to say, if I'm an LGS owner,
Yeah. Cost to LGSs would probably be $40 range for this product. That's typically where they put it. Put in an MSRT of $250, and LGS gets, you know, let's say four of them on the low end. I mean, you're essentially taking $800, probably $800 once tax and everything is in there, out of the LGS's hands. I don't understand that decision.
I totally don't get that either. That's the one thing. It was kind of like the Hasbro online store. I mean, the last thing that I saw that I was even remotely interested with the Hasbro online store was when they did the Hasbro Con, and they kind of had the mashup magic cards with like the D&D.
And the Transformers, you
know. Yeah, that stuff. I was kind of like, okay, I could see that as kind of just a, hey, there's no spot for this, so we're just going to throw it on the store website. That makes sense to me. But this one is absolutely geared toward Magic players. How many people walk into a Magic store and are like, you got any From the Vault left? And they're like, oh, man, sold out like first day. This is the kind of response you would get from your player base. Mm-hmm. And so to take that money out of the LGS, that's fascinating decision-making on what WotC's part. I was planning on talking to our LGS owner this week and find out his take on that and see if he has gotten any kind of insider rationale on why WotC is doing it that way as opposed to giving it to them.
Grab them if you can. Hopefully the WotC website won't crash when you go to order. I think it's October 5th. From the Super Ultra Mega Box to the Super Elite magazine of, well, New Yorkers would tell you, the number one city in the country. We can have a discussion about that somewhere else. New Yorker magazine, long known as a highbrow literary outlet, did a piece on Magic turning 25 years old. Just so happens that we have a language department chair on this show for just such these occasions. Brian, I know you read the New Yorker article. Your thoughts on it, the way it portrayed Magic, the way it was written in an obviously New Yorker style. So if you're not used to that,
yes,
you get inundated with it very quickly. But your thoughts on how the article portrayed the game? Did you think it was a fair treatment? And you read this as a Magic player and realize the majority of the readers of this article are not going to be Magic players. What message did you think it sent to those people about the game we love?
Well, first of all, I thought it was a very, very well-written article. I thought it approached it from a human kind of side of things. It focused a lot on the development of the game from Richard Garfield and kind of, you know, interviewing him about where it came from and how he got it kind of, you know, idea down to actual cardboard. It went through kind of the highs and lows, the popularity, how it exploded, and also some of the issues that Magic has gone through with, obviously, inclusion, exclusion of players, things of that nature. But I thought it hit all the right notes from that human side of things. You know, it's a game. It's about community. There was definitely, they had the professor who was featured. So they went to great lengths to kind of include community in this and kind of make it about that idea. And a game doesn't stick around for 25 years and have the popularity and the kinds of events that Magic puts on without that community. So I'm glad that they hit that up. I would encourage everybody to read it. And if you have a different take on it, obviously hit us up. I'd love to get people's thoughts on it. I'm a fan of The New Yorker overall because I think the quality of writing is solid. I thought the artwork that they chose to accompany the article was absolutely top notch. I can't remember the name of the artist, but it's a specific style and it kind of goes well with the Magic quote unquote troll mentality of, you know, fat middle-aged white guys, you know, sitting in their basement playing games, even though that's not really what it is. I felt like it was a little tongue-in-cheek shout out to that past stereotype. So thrilled that anytime Magic gets kind of covered outside of the realm of the websites we visit, the podcasts, etc., I feel like that's an opportunity for us to put the best foot forward. And I thought they did a really good job. Hurley, did you read it, A, and B, if you did you think it did a good job?
I read it. I thought it did a hell of a job on the article side of it. You know, this goes from a player to a non-player opinion, but I enjoyed the tongue-in-cheek, you know, kind of style of that artist. I looked over some of his other art and found out that that's the way he does things, but I do think that people who don't play the game, that is a bit, you know, let's call it stereotypical, and I think that could do a little damage. But great article. It was a very high level article. It was not you know, a bad thing for the game. It was just fantastic all around.
We'll have the link to that article in the New Yorker posted in the show notes. Check it out. Show it to somebody who you know likes reading and might not be into Magic and get their opinion on it. That leads us up to this week's Wait a minute. What's that noise? Who installed this alarm on the elevator, Matt?
Can't wait.
So next week's card is Intruder Alarm. This is a card that was only printed in Stronghold in 8th edition. It's been slowly selling out on the internet. I think it's ready to pop. It's currently about $8. They released the new card, Amara, from Guilds of Ravnica this weekend. And I think that this is going to be one of those cards that people are going to try to brew with. But it's just so rare that it's going to spike. It's going to go from a $8 card to probably a $30 card.
Ooh, okay. I'm just glad that the alarm on the elevator wasn't broken. We can move forward with it now next week as well. This week's In the Elevator, Intruder Alarm here on Tryhards. It's time to brew, and you've gone to your favorite set and gotten one of my favorite cards. I'm excited for this week's 3 minutes to brew.
Telling the gentleman before the cast, dear listeners, about this weekend when I was watching Legacy coverage, there were so many good cards that were being played, and I just kept thinking, man, Brian's list of cards that are so good and just are not played in Legacy or Modern, and this might be at the top of the list. So this week, we are doing Figure of Destiny from Eventide, hybrid mana, one red or one white Kithkin. For a red or a white hybrid, Figure of Destiny becomes a 2/2 Kithkin spirit. To spend 3 hybrid mana, if Figure of Destiny is a spirit, it becomes a 4/4 spirit warrior. For the low, low price of 6, if it's a warrior, it becomes an 8/8 Kithkin spirit warrior avatar with flying and first strike. Just an absolute house in its heyday, but it has since fallen out of favor, and I'm not sure why. to solve that riddle. We're going to brew with that card tonight. Sean, let me start with you because I know that this is one that you played the heck out of back in the day. Let's see what you got on 3 minutes to brew for Figure of Destiny.
This is the first card when I got back into Magic, really back big time in, that I wasn't able to pick up as quickly as I wanted to. And so I started with envy and jealousy as other players had more of these than I did. It was such a house, but it was sort of the P-52 Mustang of its era. The best thing then, and it quickly got outclassed. And that's just the way the game is made now. The reason you don't see this in Eternal formats, be it Modern, Legacy, whatever, a 1-1 for 1, even with hybrid mana, isn't good enough. You had to give 5 abilities to a 1-2 for 1 with hybrid mana for it to see play, but it was too good and it got banned. But enough about Deathrite Shaman. As long as you have efficient 1-mana removal that this is not protected from, I don't think you can invest the mana resources. This is why you don't see level mechanic creatures in competitive formats, because you can't afford to spend the mana and spend the turns developing it only to have it fatal pushed, path to exile, swords to plowshares, anything else, lightning bolted. It was a format defining creature in Eventide, but unfortunately, as much as I love it, it's unplayable in Eternal formats now.
Unfortunately, I think Sean's 100% right. You're looking at cards like, well, you talked about Kolaghan's Command earlier, cards that have multi-modes. You're talking about cards like Fatal Push. This one card, you can sink all this mana. You can say, yeah, I've got an 8-8, you know, Kithkin Spirit Warrior avatar with flying in first strike, and they're like Fatal Push, and you're like, oh. So I think it just sets your game back just too much. Caveat to that is, if there's a Legacy Spirits deck, I do think that this has a possibility of popping up in that, because you get a 2-2 spirit for 2. There's better spirits out there. I think that's the only way you see a possibility. Or if there's something that comes out soon that basically says, like, whenever you activate the ability of a creature, you know, you get some bonus or something like that. Right now, 1-mana removal is just takes this out, and unfortunately, this gets quickly outclassed because of 1-mana removal.
I take your points, gentlemen, about the outclassed very quickly in the 1-mana removal with swords, with Fatal Push. But at the same time, that can be not a terrible thing. This is a card that has to be answered, and I think in a modern format or in a Legacy format especially, if you play Figure of Destiny, let's say in a Stoneblade deck, which is kind of what prompted all of this, I'm playing Figure. Figure can, you know, stick around. I'm going to use it as a mana sink to try to make it an absolute threat, or it can carry equipment just as well as anything else can. If it takes out one of your opponent's Fatal Pushes or Swords to Plowshares, whatever it might be, I think that's okay, because you've still got Stormforge Mystic to go get Batterskull. You're still going to have other threats on the board, namely True Name Nemesis. You know, obviously can't be targeted, but there's a way I think that this card can leak into some other deck building. So fear not, dear Kithkin. I'm sure we will get brewing with you in the future, and you will have your day in the sun one more time.
No, brave, brave Kithkin. How we missed you so. Figure of Destiny, this week's 3 minutes to brew here on Tryhards. What'd you guys do to get better at Magic? I'm going to steal everybody's thunder and take the simplest but truest route. I watched Reed Duke play Magic a lot this weekend, and I feel like I got better at Magic because of it. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
Yeah, I'm just going to pile on with that, because as I was saying, I was so involved in these matches. I could not wait to see like who his next opponent was, what the interaction was going to be, what the turns came down to, when people played this, that, and the other thing, the mannerisms. I thought it was all just phenomenal. And so I took so much away from that on just how to kind of, I don't know, compose myself at the competitive table and to really think through things, because sometimes you feel like you're taking forever and it's only been a mere few seconds. And I think, you know, Reed Duke does that very, very well. His class about playing through some judge calls, whether they were true or not, being generous to his opponents, being kind to everybody, and sticking up for himself when he needed to, thought he just basically showed the absolute archetype of how to be a great Magic player.
Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
Actually, when everyone was over yesterday, we were discussing Magic, and we were discussing some modern cards, modern picks, modern all around. We had a pretty diverse crowd of different modern players here, so I got some good ideas for the brewing. It was just great to be able to sit around, have a beer. We were grilling. I didn't say this earlier, but I set my grill on fire, and everyone was laughing at me. I'm the only person that set an electric grill on fire, by the way.
I think that's a signal you're supposed to play Burn at the Invitational.
Maybe that's the case. But it was great to just be able to sit around and BS with everyone and just spitball ideas. It's much different than what we do here, in the sense of, okay, yeah, we do it over text message or whatever, because we just had all kinds of great ideas. And so, it was really knowledgeable, and it was great that we were able to sit around a table and talk about GP Reed Duke. And everyone was just like, oh my gosh, did you see this? Did you see that? And that's the type of excitement that you need in Magic.
What Matt did to get better at Magic hopefully will take us forward in the next week. We're going to take a little deviation from our normally scheduled programming. We're going to brew Matt's Modern deck for the Star City Games Invitational. Did you know he's going to be playing in the Invitational?
I did mention it once this episode, so thank you, Sean.
We also will be talking about cards in Modern we think should be banned and or unbanned. So a little off the beaten path, but we plan to have some fun next week. Oh, you brave soul, we hope to see you here for next week's episode of Tryhards.